Yeah, buddy, it's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3. The Fan, Brian Schottenheimer, officially introduced as head coach to the Cowboys fans 5 hours ago right here on The Fan. And we'll talk more about it now with John Owning, editor at Pro Football Focus. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
Doing great. Cannot complain. How about you, fellas?
Man, about the same. You know, hoping for the best. Now, Shoddy today, in his own words, saying he likes shifts, he likes cut splits, and he likes motions. Do these words, should they excite Cowboys fans, John?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think so, especially in the Mike McCarthy era. The Cowboys were below average, I think, almost every year in the rate of motions, motion at the snap, shifts. I mean, a lot of the motions that the Cowboys used were a lot of just window dressing with guys, you know, walking or jogging across the formation, getting set before the snap. They're not really stressing opposing defenses. And I think Shoddy kind of talked about the ability to stress defenses using those shifts, those motions, using tempo, all these different type of things that can kind of just make life more difficult for the defense, you know, make things more difficult on the second level defenders, make them have to adjust post-snap. Those type of things, I think, are some of core tenets of some of the best offenses in the NFL. And I think there's something we're going to see, especially in the Super Bowl, with teams like the Chiefs and the Eagles who really use those concepts a lot.
Yeah, John, you know, I don't think anybody plays with more width in their formations than the Cowboys. I think we're the widest playing team. So that when you talk about the cut splits and things like that, those will definitely, you know, playing with a little bit more condensed formations. These teams that seem like they're having success off their play action games and stuff like that are far more condensed than teams who are playing with these wide splits.
And I think a reason for that is because when you use those condensed splits, those condensed formations, is the receivers are adding on so much more in the run game. They're making you know, blocks on second level defenders. They're trying to cut off the Mike or cut off the Sam when you're trying to get outside and stuff like that. And I think when you add the receivers into the blocking game, that means that the stems of the routes on play actions, if they look a lot in the same vein as what a block may look like, then that's how you create those big giant holes, those giant separation on those play action passes type things. And I think that's what Shoddy was really alluding to when he was saying that the passes and the runs are going to look a lot like each other in his schemes. And I think that's going to only mean good things for the Cowboys if that's actually what, you know, becomes of the offense once the season goes here. I mean, everybody has heard the, you know, false promises of offensive coordinators and head coaches of years past, and it never came to fruition. So it's great to hear it now, but I think I'm speaking for everybody when I say, you know, I want to see it. I want to see it in training camp. I want to see it in the preseason. I want to see it in the regular season. I don't want to wait until after, you know, the bye week when the Cowboys are 2-4, you know, until they finally introduce those type of concepts into the offense.
Yeah, we've heard these promises before, John, so I'm with you on that. And I understand how the hire might be underwhelming for a lot of people, but I also think that this is a lot of the stuff that we've been asking for. And I think a fair amount of optimism about, you know, watching them take their shot at that should, you know, is well placed right now. How would you quantify it, though? Like, what is that potentially worth if the Cowboys would add that? What's the ceiling on how much that could improve you?
I think it's difficult to know because, you know, like in the NFL, there's so many different parts that play such a huge point. But I'm always someone that you want to kind of grease the edges. You want to always get those, try to take advantage of those little advantages that you can get throughout a game. You know, using motion and using these condensed formations, they don't promise effective offensive in and of themselves, but they give you a better opportunity to be successful on a more consistent basis. And I think if the Cowboys are more consistent, you know, in the past, they've kind of been beating up on the cans of the NFL and not been able to be productive against the top flight defenses. Using these types of concepts and these types of like formations, these types of play style, I think those are types of things that can allow them to be more consistent against these better offenses. So I think you'll see, I think in the best case, you're going to see less of a drop off between how they perform against kind of the rudimentary teams versus how they perform against the elite defenses.
John, one thing Shoddy said during the presser today was that he had led the NFL in rushing twice during his tenure as an offensive coordinator. One other note from Jonathan Jones was that the Cowboys could be looking at Clayton Adams, Cardinals offensive line coach, to slide into the offensive coordinator role. How could that really help and improve the running game? Because I think schematically, we've all been looking at this Cowboys rushing attack and say it's very basic.
Yeah, I think the Clayton Adams interview in particular is really interesting because the Arizona Cardinals run game since he came in 2023 has been one of the most varied in the NFL, and especially much more varied than the Cowboys have been the last 2 years. I mean, the Cardinals have used four different play concepts at least 20% or at least 15% of the time. They use inside zone 19% of the runs, man concepts 18%. Outside zone, 17.5%, counters, 15.9%, pool leads, 14.2%. So you see how much versatility and diversity there is in the run game, and they're doing these misdirections. I think that especially the introduction of more counters, I mean, the Cowboys were one of the teams that used counters least frequently last couple years, and the Cardinals have been towards the top. And I just love those kind of misdirection plays that give your offensive linemen up front better angles to the second level, because when you're running a counter play, you know, the tailback in the backfield is taking a step against where he's actually going to run. And that in when you draw it up, that's going to cause the linebackers to take one false step to the weak side. And that's going to give your offensive lineman, you know, depending on what front it is, the center or the backside guard or the front side guard, to climb up to the second level. And it gives him just a half tick of second more time to be able to get that cutoff and, you know, turn into bigger running lanes, give somebody like Rico Dowdle a better runway to get to the second level. I think all those type of things are very important, and I think they would be very beneficial for a Cowboys run scheme that they need to, you know, since we don't have the best offensive line in the NFL, you've got to scheme it up for them and make it easier for them, make the angles to the second level a lot easier, you know, kind of those things that we've seen Shanahan evolve himself into from just an outside zone guy.
Yeah, John, it's that pin and pull stuff. I mean, we watched Arizona just kill Dallas in like a week three or week four game a couple years ago with that pin and pull. But you think also, too, with the offensive line not being as good, but it seems like it has some elements of some guys that kind of can play that way, that can get out in space and do that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Especially, you know, guys like Tyler Smith, they get out and they're really effective as lead blockers, you know, on pulls, whether they're kicking out or they're leading through the hole. I think Brock Hoffman is someone who moves well. Cooper Beebe is someone who moves well. I think that's something we saw when Zach Martin went out, was because of the injuries that he's been dealing with, is he couldn't really move well. He couldn't really get out there in front and really generate those kickouts or those leads up the hole to create those big running lanes. And I think kind of the way the Cowboys offensive line is now, the direction it's headed with these young guys, these athletic guys like Guyton, Steele, Beebe, Tyler Smith, Brock Hoffman, TJ Bass. I think this definitely type of diverse approach, I think, lends itself to the skill set of their offensive line as a whole. And I think it's something that's going to be important to keep in mind, especially for the draft this year as well.
John Owning, Pro Football Focus, with us here in the Nation. Looks like Eberflus is going to get the gig as defensive coordinator. What would you say are the biggest differences between him and Zim, and how do you expect him to use Micah?
Oh, completely different. I mean, if we're going to judge them based on what they've done in the past, they're just completely different philosophies on defense, completely different, you know, just they show different pictures. You know, Eberflus's defense over 70% of the time with the Bears and with the Colts in his tenures, they played static defenses, meaning if they had one safety high pre-snap, there's going to be one safety high post-snap. If there's two safeties high pre-snap, it's going to be two safeties high post-snap. He's someone who likes to play that bend but don't break kind of Marinelli style, where we saw Vader Zim. He was a little bit more aggressive on a down-by-down basis. He was ability to move people around the formation, create different looks, mug the A gaps, those type of things. Eberflus is much more, you know, alignment, assignment, keep it simple, allow my guys to play fast, make plays, and create turnovers. Kind of that whole Rod Marinelli style of defense. They're going to play a lot of under fronts. So that means the under tackle, the defense, the three technique is going to be uber important, because the whole purpose of the under front is to give the three technique one-on-ones. So someone like an Osa Odighizuo would be great for that, or, you know, whoever they decide to replace him with if he leaves for greener pastures in free agency. So, you know, I'm a little bit worried about Eberflus. I think he's someone who's a good name, like he's had success as a defensive coordinator, but I'm a little bit questionable on how his scheme really fits the defense. I was kind of looking for them to keep pushing toward that Zimmer direction, even if he wasn't going to be the defensive coordinator. You know, that aggressive, creative style on third down, throw the kitchen sink at opposing QBs and see what happens, you know. So I'm a little bit worried about how Eberflus is going to mesh with the personnel the Cowboys have on defense.
You know, John, it's interesting you say that because, you know, Flus was a holdover from the Rob Ryan, you know, regime. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious, is he more Rob Ryan or is he more Rod Marinelli when it comes to, if I could ask you that question?
Yeah, I mean, if we're just basing on the way he's called defenses in the past, and who knows if he, you know, has that Rob Ryan Rolodex still in his back pocket that he can pull out. He just hasn't had the personnel to use that.
Sure.
But with the Colts and the Bears, he was totally a Rod Marinelli style defense. It was the 100% four down. We're going to play under fronts. We're going to play a kind of conservative coverage style, keep everything in front of us, limit big plays, rally to turnovers, everybody rally to the ball, those type of things. Try to be strong up front, use big defensive ends to stop the run, those type of things. So he's definitely – that's the thing that's been interesting is when I've, you know, brought up Eberflus and how similar his defenses have been to Rod Marinelli, I've been getting a lot of responses just like you asking, like, but what about his time with Rob Ryan? He was kind of a Rob Ryan guy. Is he someone that he can even implement a 3-4, implement a blitz-heavy team? And while they did blitz a little bit more with Chicago, I think that was more because they just didn't have the cats to generate pressure from a four-down alignment. You know, they didn't have, until they got Montez Sweat, they really didn't have anybody that could generate a pass rush and win one-on-one situation. So I'm not sure if that was something more of, you know, that he did because he had to, or if it's something that he wants to do frequently. But if you wanted to judge this whole entire defensive coordinator or play calling experience on the defensive side of the ball, definitely much more of a Marinelli style.
So, John, okay, so you say Marinelli style, but when you said something about big defensive ends, and, man, I feel like that we've been watching, I know in the draft, a lot of these, like, 285, 290-pound guys, kind of like there's a bendy group and there's a non-bendy group. You think he lends towards the non-bendy group, like those Ohio State kids, maybe with the Texas A&M kids? Which way do you think they would lean then for him?
Yeah, definitely for the strong side defensive end, for, you know, that DeMarcus Lawrence style defensive end. He wants the bigger guys. You know, that's why he traded for a Montez Sweat. That's why he drafted guys. I think he drafted, what was his name, Jalen Holmes from Ohio State when he was with Colts, who was a bigger defensive end.
Yeah.
Played the run well. That's why I think he's going to be someone who's going to really fall in love with Texas A&M's, you know, Shamar Stewart, who's big 6'5", 281.
Yeah, they're both. Yeah, him and Skorton are both big. Yeah, they're big dudes.
Insane. And it's just, and for a team like the Cowboys, you know, who have struggled defending the run, I see why that's beneficial to have, you know, especially on that strong side when you're going against double teams between tackle and tight end so much, to have that big, strong guy that can set the edge, turn everything inside, and make it easier for the rest of your one-gap defense to have success and generate stops. So I totally understand that. And especially because we already have a guy like Micah who's kind of already fits that bendy, weak side profile, I definitely think he's going to be looking to try to find those bigger, stronger defensive ends in the draft or even in free agency if that's the way the Cowboys decide to go.
So you're not down for my guy Mike Green then?
I mean, I'm personally down. I would love it. You know, I'm riding that train as hard as I can. I think he is fantastic. But I'm not sure. I mean,
did he weigh like 230?
I'm the type of person that says, give me as much pass rush as possible and we'll figure it out. But I'm not sure that Eberflus is going to be that type of guy.
John Owning, Pro Football Focus here, wrapping up with you in the nation. So going into the first round at 12, where's the biggest opportunity? Are you looking for a pass rusher? You looking for one of those offensive linemen or a runner? If you could have your way, which way would they go?
Personally, I think everybody understands that Ashton Jeanty is one of the best, you know, two or three players in the entire draft, the best running back in the class, and he's a fantastic talent, but I don't think that that position is something that would be the most beneficial for the Cowboys, not only next year, but for the future. Mm-hmm. I'm someone who wants to, you know, improve the lines. Get me a pass rusher, get me a defensive tackle, get me an offensive lineman, somewhere we can win the trenches, because that was an area where so much over the last two or three seasons when the Cowboys lose, it's because they're losing the trench battle up front. I think once you win the trench battle, it makes life so much easier for everybody, all of the skill positions around it, that you don't need to allocate those types of resources to like a position like a running back, where especially in this class, when you get a guy like Omarion Hampton, Caleb Johnson, you know, even going further, you know, the Ollie Gordons of the world, the Dylan Sampsons of the world. So I just think the class is so deep, in addition to the fact that the Cowboys have so many important needs up front. I would definitely point my direction there. The one caveat I will have is if a really, really top-notch receiver falls to them at number 12, you know, like a Territory McMillan or somebody like that. I'm halfway sold on Luther Burden so far. I think he would be a great fit, but I'm just not sure that he's good enough separating within a normal route tree to warrant a top 15 pick. I'm still kind of deciding there, still early in the draft process. We'll figure that out as it goes, but I'm focusing primarily on the trenches if everything's the same.
I love it, John. Great insights. We'll catch up with you next time. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Salute. You can watch John Owning, Pro Football Focus. If you want to reach out to him on X or there on the website, you're going to get a ton of great football information, as you were just treated to over the last 15 minutes. It's time for Woolchuck's Top 10 at 420, buddy. Where are you taking us?
What are the 10 best individual rivalries in sports history? 877-881-1053. And can we even call Allen versus Mahomes a rivalry? That's next.
Yeah, buddy. Welcome back. Tomorrow we're going to be in Rockwall at the Brass Tap there with our friends from Stella Artois. Hope you can make it tomorrow, Rockwell. Okay. It's time now for Woolchuck's Top 10 of 420. Segment is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one's injured in a car, truck, wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Go to frankelfirm.com. Here he is, Zach with an H. Your Woolly Bully.
Thank you, General. What are the best individual sports rivalries in the history of sports? 877-881-1053. Buck O'Kilroy in Carthage, Texas, a.k.a. Tim, we love you, Pappy. Yankees, Red Sox. It's not teams, it's specific people. But, yes, Yankees, Red Sox is great. 972 Pete Carroll versus Jim Harbaugh, which is now getting renewed, as we had USC, Stanford, Seahawks, Niners, and now we'll get Raiders and Chargers. That's going to be fun. I didn't think about that when they first hired Pete Carroll there. But those two definitely had a good rivalry brewing for years. Quick Rangers Nuggets. Looks like the Rangers are announcing the Rangers Sports Network with a major cable deal that is also expected soon. So they're also going to have the streaming, which will be on Victory Plus. But over-the-air broadcast will be on their local TV rights, which we still don't know exactly where that'll pop on. But Rangers Sports Media and Entertainment was just announced today. And our buddy Jim Cochran is the Rangers Chief Revenue Officer. He's getting promoted to Executive Vice President and Chief Business Officer.
No surprise.
So congratulations, man. Jim.
Guys, big game James.
Big game James.
Sure, so it looks like you will have other ways to consume your Texas Rangers. Of course, you should always just listen to the best in the business, the Hall of Famer Eric Nadell, Matt Hicks, and Jared Sandler right here on 105.3 The Fan, your home of Texas Rangers baseball. But along with Victory Plus, we will also have the Texas Rangers Television Network. So that'll be fun. Ranger Sports Network, RSN. And then Mr. Chavez is back in the building, boys. 41-year-old who liked to scoot himself around. One of my favorite clubhouse guys when I was filling in. Jesse Chavez is back for the fourth time as a Texas Ranger. He began his career with the organization in 2002. He has been signed to a minor league contract with an invitation to spring training, and I'm excited. I mean, that definitely would be a fun interview for us to do when we get out there because – hey, he's a character. Jesse is a fun one, and who knows? Maybe he's your closer. Could that be?
Could that be? He's got a little. I like the cut of his jib. Always have the mustache, the glasses, the long pants.
He's got a hell of a look.
He brings it strong.
Why was
dripping
I
dripping with confidence?
Why was I watching? Was he last with the Braves?
He was with the Braves.
Okay,
had why 2.57 ERA?
We don't talk about that though, Broadus. You know that.
What was his ERA?
2.57.
Okay. Not bad.
Pretty good.
Not bad.
Not bad.
I I think he was pitching in one of those blowout games one time I was watching.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I think the Braves were down a lot.
Oh, he's doing some...
And mopping it up. Yeah.
Yeah, 2022, before he landed with the Braves, which really helped rejuvenate his career, he was struggling. I mean, he was bouncing around the league a little bit with three different teams. But hey, he's back home now.
Name all the teams he's been with.
The list is really too long.
He gets around a little bit, okay?
No, I'm serious. It's funny. It's what team has he not been with?
Yeah, he's like, who is our quarterback? Was it Gerard Johnson
played
for basically everybody?
That's right. All the leagues, every football league ever existed, Josh Johnson's played for and started for.
Jesse
and
Shelton
lost games for.
He's spent
42
time.
Years old?
He'll be 42 in August.
Wow. Yeah,
but he's got the arm.
He's played for the Pirates, the Braves, the Royals, the Jays, the A's, the Jays, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Rangers, the Cubs, the Rangers, the Braves, the Cubs, the Braves, the Angels, the Braves.
Full on rally house bit.
World Series champion in 2021,
I've been
baby.
Everywhere, man.
I'm everywhere.
Yeah, but you know where he is now? He's home. And he's ready to go win a title.
That's
our guy. Fourth time he's home.
That's our guy.
He's like, I would say he's a boomerang.
Four times the charm, man.
He looks like a boomer. Cut off the yang. Look at this. He looks like a manager.
He's a badass looking dude.
He's got the weird thing going where he's got the middle-aged man neck, but still sporting the double earrings of a younger man.
Yes.
It's an interesting look.
You're talking about like the turkey neck kind
of thing? He's always got a fresh cut on.
Yeah, he's got turkey neck and the side mouth thing going with the little line down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's got moxie.
He does
right?
have moxie.
Hey, he
commands the bump.
I think he'll fit right in.
I'm excited.
CY likes the old reliever, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You got dad bod and you're over 35. CY's got you on a short
list.
Come on in
here.
You like that useless baseball analysis there,
what are you doing over there? Eric's just like,
can you still throw hard? You sure can.
World Series, here we go. Game 7.
Alpha,
get him, Jesse. Stand up.
Let's go, Jesse.
Two outs. Stand up.
Jesse.
You got it. All right, 10 best individual rivalries in sports history. We've got Chris Paul versus Scott Foster from the 214. That's a good one. Yeah. Jerry
Scott
Jones.
Foster refereed us the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Australian for beer, too.
The extender.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones versus Cowboys progression from the 682. Ollie Frazier, absolutely, that'll be on here. Mm. Nolan Ryan against Robin Ventura. That's a good one from the 214. Sampras versus Agassi. A little tennis mixed in there.
You could go a lot of tennis. Borg, Connors, McEnroe, Connors.
McEnroe, Borg got texted in. 469 nailed three that are definitely on the list.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. All three of them are going to be on there. You guys have any others
Jesse
you want to throw
Chavez
out there?
Versus
Bird
Major
Magic.
League Baseball. Yeah.
Three matchups of Jesse.
Versus the waiver wire.
I think Andre Johnson, Cortland Finnegan was good. Mike Evans, Marshawn Lattimore certainly gave us some good ones. Josh Norman, Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah.
That was a good back and forth there. Eric Williams, Reggie White, although that might have not even been a rivalry. That might have just been Eric Williams whipping ass.
That was a one-way street, according to the Rev.
That's why, like, for me, Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes, like, until Allen beats him in the playoffs, isn't it a rivalry? Mahomes is owning his ass. I don't care about the regular season doubts.
He's owning his entire body. It's not even just his ass at this point. And the games have been close enough, though. Like, these games have been so, like, down to the wire. I understand the ultimate win-loss heavily favored in one direction.
Gotta win. Gotta get a win.
I get that. If that's going to be a part of the standard, I understand it being that way.
Like, Brady Manning was great, and ultimately Manning ended up with a winning record versus Brady in the playoffs.
I mean, they're winning enough in the regular season to provide intrigue. They're competitive enough games. I'm going to say this is the rare exception, Wolchuk.
You're calling it like the Super Bowl before the Super Bowl.
I believe that it is, and I was hopeful that Josh Allen could finally get on the win column. But 0-4 now. Gosh, Josh, you need to get a win here, man.
Yeah, come on, Josh.
You're just like so close, yet so far. It's so close, yet so far.
That's why, like, you could just see the dejection on his face the whole time they kept cutting to him just by himself, sulking on the bench, and then he gets to the podium, and it's just like...
Let's take a deep breath.
Yeah.
In order to be the best, you got to beat the best, and we didn't do that today.
And that was the thing, too. He's had to say it like five different times before he nailed the actual line.
He might have been Captain Percocet last night. I would have been after that.
Josh Perk, here we go.
You give me the Favre plan here.
Number 10, we've got LeBron versus Steph. NBA icons. I mean, they did seem like they were playing in the NBA Finals every year for a little while. NBA.
And LeBron got one.
Number 9 is Ovechkin versus Crosby. These two certainly went head-to-head a lot in the postseason, the Penguins and the Capitals. They've been going to seven-game series, and Ovechkin was able to get his victory. Game six, second round back in 2018. They go hoist the Stanley Cup.
He's 20 goals away from breaking Gretzky's record.
It's pretty amazing.
I think it's 20 now.
Number eight is Chris Evert and Martina Navratilova.
Yep.
Martina.
Navratilova.
Navratilova.
It's a tough one to say.
The legend's name. We'll check.
She won 14 of the 22 Grand Slams. I don't really pretend to be a tennis guy. I'm sorry.
That's just being a sports guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Martina
Navratilova. You did a fine job on the Shrine Bowl stuff today, though.
Oh, thank you.
You did a great job.
Not a football player. I don't know.
And pretty much, it's kind of where I'm at right now.
I'm just a caveman.
And hockey.
Well, I mean, you get football guy of the day most often, so there's a trade-off to it.
Oh, he looks it up, Dalton. I mean, hey, what are you doing over
I'll definitely concede the pronunciation of Navratilova.
Is it Martina Navratilova?
Martina? Brady Manning comes in at number seven. That would be a little higher. Number six is Gretzky versus Mario Lemieux. That was a good one in the 80s and the 90s. Those two going back and forth. Gretzky, overall, most notable.
Wasn't enough overlap for me.
Yeah.
Gretzky had full-on dominated a little past his prime by the time Mario emerged.
Yeah, two Stanley Cup titles over that time for Gretzky. And otherwise, from 87 to 93, those two were just trading off scoring titles. Roger Federer versus Rafael Nadal comes in at five.
I'm surprised that's not in the top three.
You can pronounce those names, huh?
Yeah, I can.
Male
sexist,
tennis
you know?
Players, yeah, way to go.
Serena versus Martina Hingis.
Who's Martina Hingis?
On the women's side?
I thought you were going to say her rival.
Is it Serena versus Venus?
More of a Venus guy. Serena? Lionel Messi?
She had no rival?
Versus, no, she didn't. She just won, right?
Messi Ronaldo.
Messi Ronaldo at four. That make you tingle?
That one's easy.
That gets you going?
Yeah.
Three is Ollie Frazier.
Goat off.
Two, we've got Bill Russell versus Wilt Chamberlain.
Ooh. Wow.
Gosh, I wish those two were like playing in today's NBA and we can watch just how amazing they would be.
Eric could be telling you, like, the centers aren't any, they're not worth anything.
Oh, they're playing lawyers and plumbers.
They don't shoot threes.
How do you spread the defense?
What a wasted position.
How do you spread the defense with two big
who
centers
needs a
clogging
point guard
everything
in today's
up?
NBA?
God.
Number one, though.
I'll tell you why you shouldn't run the ball either. We'll do that next segment.
Greatest individual rivalry of all time. Bird Magic.
There it is.
That's the one.
It changed the sport.
Yeah, it did, man.
Tiger Phil was a good one from the 774. Don Zimmer versus Pedro Martinez.
How about Nicholas and Palmer?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Kind of one-sided, wasn't it?
They both battled, man.
Yeah.
Kobe versus Shaq.
They both battled.
Now you say they battled.
Well, hell, I would have tried if you'd have sent me out there.
Yeah, they battled.
Dawson battled us way to a 98 today.
Hey, anytime two dudes are like swinging a golf club and smoking cigs while they're doing it, they're battling.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, maybe a cocktail between rounds.
We have shocking stats of Chiefs dominance. That'd be the Kansas City Chiefs. That's coming up next right here, the G-Bag Nation. On your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. Welcome back. Thank you, Lucius. G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. No love for Chestnut and Kobayashi, asked the 806. That's a good question. Another question for you. When's the last day you didn't leave the house with a stocking cap or beanie or whatever they call it? I feel like I've been wearing this thing since Christmas, man. It's just so dang cold. And I'm ready for it to heat back up.
I couldn't find my 105.3 The Fan beanie until I went digging for a while.
Bingo.
And struck gold. So, welcome back.
I know that feeling. My favorite wool hat made in Ecuador is missing right now. And I'm starting to panic a little bit because I only know one store to get those in all the world. Okay, we have stats of Chiefs dominance here in just a moment. A little bit of Mavs. This story is fascinating. Kyler Kelly signing off the Lakers G League team. He's averaging 9.5 points, 5.8 rebounds. He was all G League defense last year. He led the league in blocks, but he's skinny and limited. Pretty mobile for like a super tall guy, and he uses that to kind of like creep around and get blocks off the ball. But on offense, he can catch lobs. That's about it. He doesn't pass well. He doesn't dribble well. He doesn't shoot well. But like when he has 16 points, he probably caught 8 lobs. And between Kyrie Irving and Luka, I wouldn't be surprised if they can, you know, harvest some success out of this.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen how important that is with Lively and Gafford over this last year and a half or whatever. The lob stuff was, I mean, it was paramount to their success offensively last year on their run. So that is something that is a skill that Luka and Kyrie can get the best out of for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, I don't think any NBA team wants to play this guy or even have him on your NBA roster. But the state of affairs with the Mavs now is to such an extent with Kleba, Powell, and Lively being out that he could play, you know, somewhat of a role starting tonight. Okay, since the start of 2019's postseason, the Chiefs have had 11 playoff drives in the fourth quarter or overtime when down by a score. Okay, you get that? 2019 postseason till today, 11 playoff drives in the fourth quarter overtime down by a score. How did they do in those 11 drives?
Probably perfect.
Dominated it. Scored 12 times.
7 touchdowns, 4 game-tying field goals. 0 first downs by penalties, by the way, on those 11 drives, points out Josh Dubow, NFL reporter. Mm. So every time they've needed a score, they've got it. Either one of 4 game-tying field goals or 7 touchdowns. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, they're ready for whatever moment comes their way. They can sort of flip that switch. Judging them in the regular season is a fool's errand because they're a different team in the postseason. And you saw firsthand yet last night, like, when they need a play on either side of the ball, they've got something in the holster ready to fire.
It's incredible, isn't it, Brian? Have you ever seen a team be able to flip the switch to that extent?
Just be so bad in the or not bad, but
average.
Just average.
I mean, this is perfection. We get the ball. We need a score. We're getting at least that score, maybe the touchdown as well.
Well, like, I was trying to think of other sports, like, where their teams, like, you guys are big basketball guys.
There's Spurs like
this. That's what I'm saying. With the Spurs like this.
Spurs would coast in the regular season and then find a way to be in the finals.
Spurs?
No, because, you know, even the Jordans and Kobe's, these, you know, game winning shots, all these situations are well below 50%, you know?
Well, I was just saying a team that wasn't very, like, wasn't, like, really, really humming along during the regular season, but then you get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, you could look at the Houston Rockets in 96. I think they won it as a 6 seed. But that was never under.
Well, I was just thinking of a champion. Really, really good team.
Yeah.
Like the Chiefs are really,
just
really,
get us to the playoffs, yeah, and we're going to lay waste
just,
to everybody.
Yeah, we're just, we'll, you know, it doesn't
I don't
matter.
Think to this extent, not to this level of dominance. Mahomes has led 6 of the last 12 fourth quarter comeback wins in all of the NFL playoffs. A lot of one score games, but the last 12 times we've had a fourth quarter comeback in the NFL playoffs, 6 of them have been Patrick Mahomes. Okay.
Oh, man.
The only players with more than 5 in their entire careers are Mahomes with 5 and Montana with 5 and Brady with 9.
Okay,
wow.
So he's already on Brady's heels and already greater than Montana there. Mm. In that particular department.
Yeah, he keeps stacking them up, man. This is really unprecedented.
He's been an NFL starter for 7 seasons, and the worst finish of his career is losing in the AFC Championship game, both times in overtime. In the other 5 seasons, Patrick Mahomes has made the Super Bowl. Is he going to keep this up?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, through 7 seasons as a starter, Mahomes 17-3 in the playoffs, Brady 14-3. Mahomes 5 AFC titles, Brady 4. Both have 3 Super Bowls. He will get more rings than Brady, and he will go down as not only the greatest quarterback to ever play, but the greatest athlete to ever play. And I absolutely believe that. And Andy might as well just go along for the ride with him.
I mean, it was his first or second season that I started saying, this is the future GOAT, right? Yeah. And I figured, man, it's going to take him a while. But it seems like they're on a run now where 3, 4, 5 in a row. And, you know, even before he's 35 years old, we could be talking about him eclipsing Brady.
Who needs who more? Does
Andy needs Mahomes more than Mahomes needs Andy?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a good question. I think
that was quick, though. I'm proud of you for being that ready.
I would agree, because it's just like we saw with Brady and Bill. Like, ultimately, Brady went on and won a championship without Bill. I think Mahomes could win a Super Bowl without Andy, but I do think, like,
It's a perfect marriage.
It is. Like, I don't know that Mahomes' career would be anywhere close to what it is now had the Chiefs not moved up and he got paired with Andy Reid. I mean, I do think he owes Andy a lot of credit, but
totally.
Being who he is now, when Andy retires, I still think Mahomes is going to be able to win a championship.
I think, you know, the difference-making coaches that are going to consistently put you in a position to succeed might be more rare than the difference-making quarterbacks.
Oh, they are.
You know, this is Bill Walsh, Jimmy Johnson, Nick Saban type of stuff that I think he's able to work with.
I mean, it is nuts that Andy Reid is going to be in a Super Bowl again, where he's the winningest coach for both teams playing in the Super Bowl, for the Eagles and the Chiefs. Mm. I mean, that alone speaks volumes.
Highest quarterback rating in a conference championship game or Super Bowl since 2018. Number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6 are all Patrick Mahomes. Number 5 is Brock Purdy. Congratulations to him for what he was able to do last year against Detroit. And then number 7, Jaden Daniels. So salute to him for what he was able to do against that Philadelphia Eagles defense. That was, you know, all in all, a good job. How about Chris Jones saying, we're going to continue to win as long as they let Spags be our defensive coordinator and not hire him as a head coach? How important is that? We just talked about Mahomes and Reed. You know, he said we started winning when this guy got here. Yeah. And he's right. So I think that's an overlooked part of this equation as well.
One of the biggest passing of the guards or whatever, passing of the torches of all time, going from Bob Sutton to Steve Spagnuolo.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's night and day difference for sure. And you have to think, if you're the Raiders, I'm sure they're excited about what they got going with Pete Carroll. But, I mean, you could have weakened your opponent in the division and gotten a defensive-minded guy who's been a head coach before, certainly doesn't have the head coaching success. But that's, I mean, the idea that you could take him from the Chiefs, I'm sure all of the other 30 teams in the NFL would have been like, thank you.
I mean, it's incredible to like have the cojones to call up some of these plays, right? And and maybe Aaron Glenn had a little bit too much of it. Maybe Dan Quinn didn't have the right mix of it last year against Green Bay. You know, maybe the Longhorns called it at the perfectly wrong time. It just seems like Spags knows when to deploy that super aggressive defensive play call. If I'm a Chiefs fan, I'm thinking we can't lose Mahomes, we can't lose Reed. And if we lose Spags and Chris Jones, then I think everything is now, you know, up for a reset potentially. That's the way I'd look at it as a Chiefs fan. I'd have a high level of concern.
Yeah, you know? I don't think we do give enough credit to the Chiefs defense and for this entire run. I mean, I made the statement earlier. I do think Steve Spagnuolo now has put himself as the greatest big game coordinator in the history of sports in the NFL for me. I think he's passed what Bill Belichick did as a defensive coordinator, because now he's done it two different spots and he stopped what at that time in 07 with the Patriots was the best offense we'd ever seen. So to me, to do what he's done in Kansas City and Chris Jones, who's probably the best defensive closer, and then you've got the best offensive closer, that defense, and they've changed a lot of parts out. Legarius Sneed, all pro. It's okay. Here's our guy, Trent McDuffie, who we've drafted. That's an absolute savage, a corner.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of good stuff in there, you know, and it'll be interesting to see in a couple, 2-3 years, you know, what that defense might look like, but they'll go at least one more year with Spagnuolo. And, you know, this has been kind of a rebuilding type of situation along the offensive line, the skill players, and Kansas City seems so convincing. And on the other side of the coin, of course, you have the Bills. Greg Rosenthal pointing out they've been top five in point differential 5 straight years, reaching at least the division round each time, that perhaps the best sustained run ever to not make a Super Bowl. This is a Patrick Mahomes tweet. And then David Hellman, dating back to 1972, NFL teams that have scored 4 touchdowns, committed 0 turnovers in a playoff game are 85-6. The Bills' last 2 playoff losses at Arrowhead are 2 of those 6. You score 4 touchdowns, no turnovers in a playoff game, 85-6 all time, unless you're playing the Kansas City Chiefs, and then you're 0-2. Okay, it is the G-Bag Nation here. There's a look at statistical dominance by these Kansas City Chiefs as we stand really in awe of where they are historically. And so short removed from the New England Patriots dynasty.
Yes, yeah.
Isn't that just a trip?
No lag time.
Football's finest coming up next. Chief, where are you taking us?
More takeaways from championship weekend, and we'll hear from a giddy and hungry Andy Reid next in the Nation.